Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip.
Long time no see.
Well, I just want to let everybody know how efficiently I accomplished the fact that we are not recording in the same room, so I don't have to make awkward eye contact with you.
You did very, very well with that.
In fact, I planned my whole awful, horrible, no good, terrible, very bad traveling days just so that you would have pity on me and let me record this later.
Just so that the rest of the time that we were together was so jam-packed and from like one thing to the next, that there was absolutely no way we could find a quiet hour to record.
You know it.
Cunning. So I was driving home from the grocery store earlier today and thought, you know, that's only the fourth time we've actually like hung out in person.
Yeah, I mean, you can't think about that stuff because it just doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't, but it just made me go, like, we have so much fun with this podcast and we have so much fun when we're together. It makes me go, like, time to strategize living closer together, clearly.
Yeah, definitely.
So how was your trip back?
Pretty uneventful. I did have another run-in with the same airline that I had major problems with on Thursday, but at least my flight, when it like took off and we were in the air, I actually cried because I was so excited with the realization that I was going to come home without needing to spend the entirety of a 22-hour period in an airport or an airplane. So that was exciting.
Yeah, your trip to Berkeley was pretty, like, it's like one of the, like, for domestic travel with no, like, natural disaster to point to, like no blizzards or, you know, big giant storms to like attribute it all to.
And it was a direct flight.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it was pretty much.
That I didn't check my bag for. Like I did everything I could possibly do as a human being to avoid what happened to me.
2-hour travel day.
Never mind. It was a good experience for me to, learn to persevere and to change my attitude and to, you know, say, okay, it's behind me. I've got to move on. There's nothing I can do about it. I wish that I had been less sleep deprived kind of going into the weekend because I just couldn't shake all the things that go along with not sleeping, all the health things that we talk about, you know, craving sugar and being in a bad mood, being cranky, being stressed out, more prone to just anxiety in general. Like a little thing would happen and it felt like so much bigger. Just all the things that are associated. And I wasn't thinking very clearly, which wasn't helpful during presentations. But yeah, it was pretty intense. But it's over, it's done. And I did have some really good times once I was there. It was a lot of fun to see and hang out with everyone, which normally, well, really that's like 95% of why I go to these things. And my friend Danielle Walker from Against All Grain kind of lives in that area. Although she didn't come to AHS, I got to spend some good quality time with her, which was really important to me about that trip. So, yeah, all in all, it was good. And I heard the rumor on the street is that the majority of people, no, I can't say people, the majority of women felt that our talk was their favorite talk about the entire conference. So
really?
Oh yeah. I had like at least a dozen people come up to me and tell me that. And actually I stayed in the dorm rooms another 18,472 that I made terrible decisions over that weekend. But one of the women who was like sharing a suite with me, when I asked her, because I completely missed Thursday. For people who don't know, I was either in an airport or traveling for 22 hours on Thursday and arrived at our own book signing 2 hours late. And there was just the nicest group of people who were there happily waiting for me when
they
I got there.
Such a nice crowd.
Like, it was amazing.
Shout out to the people who came out to meet us at Barnes & Noble Emeryville, because like, what a great group of people.
It was unbelievable, because I really wanted to give up. Like, there were several points where I just was like, I can't do it. Like, I have to go back and sleep. Like, I can't.
Well, so we should tell people like the story of like, we were texting, and it was like while we did a joint signing with Jimmy Moore, and it was while like Jimmy and I were talking, and we talked for an hour and 40 minutes to try and like entertain the people long enough to stay for you, which is like way longer than I've ever talked at any book signing ever. Like, we talked, it was like talk and then Q&A, and then it was actually really fun. I think I might start structuring my book signings to have a little bit more Q&A time. But we would get these text messages from you, and it became this like group conversation. And I'd be like, oh no, like Stacy's waiting for her bag now.
Oh no, they lost her bag. Yet another problem has she encountered.
We ended up, so many people had brought copies of Eat Like a Dinosaur or Beyond Bacon for you to sign. So I was like, okay, whoever bought one of Stacy's books, like hold it up and I'll take a picture and I'll text it to Stacy and motivate her to come here. And
because I had texted you a pouty face of me in front of baggage claim saying...
Which I then showed to everybody.
Yes, exactly. So it was quite the adventure. And I did eventually make it, thanks to Uber. Oh my gosh. Like, if you don't know what Uber is, Google it, because that saved my life this weekend. There's no way I would have survived without Uber.
We all became, like, major Uber converts. Like,
yeah.
It was...
So... I was talking to the women in the dorm, because I had completely missed Thursday for the reasons we just described. And I said, okay, what was everybody's favorite thing, or what did they learn about what I missed today? And one of the women said that what she learned was that, well, she was older and she was going into like a menopause type hormonal shift. And she was talking about how she was experiencing difficulty maintaining her weight because her metabolism was shifting. And she was like, I've learned that I really need to go much lower carb and get into ketosis. And I kind of had this moment where I was like, I don't know what they talked about on Thursday, but you really need to attend both of my talks today. And I was like, you of all people really need to attend both of my talks today. And she looked at me like I was crazy, because I didn't realize that they had no idea who I was, which is honestly really awesome. And so then the other girl said that her favorite talk of the day was Sarah Ballantyne's autoimmunity talk.
Aww.
And she had type 2 diabetes. And so she said that she went to your talk looking for answers to a lot of her questions, and that what she ended up with was a lot more questions. So I was like, oh, that's my friend. Like, I'm cool with her. I do a podcast with her. You should listen to it. And then the other talk that I heard that was really awesome on Thursday that I missed was I think it was Jamie Scott did the importance on muscle mass versus fat in the context of health. And I'm really interested in watching that one on YouTube when it becomes available through the Ancestral Health Foundation. They told you and I that they would have those up really shortly. And so, I just think that that is a phenomenal approach to kind of what we've been describing to people with much less clarity for a long time. And that I think really encompasses kind of the platform that I've taken over the last year in terms of like, you know, focusing on my health and my hormones and getting stronger and healthier and how much better I feel. And so although, you know, I'm not getting smaller like if you were physically to look at me. In fact,
you are getting smaller. You're not getting lighter, but you are getting smaller.
So I just think that that's a phenomenal approach, and I can't wait to hear kind of more about that and some of the science that he found. And
there was at least a dozen talks where I was like, oh no, I have to pick one. Which one do I go to? And I'm like, I'm just gonna have to watch the other one on YouTube later.
Yeah. So somebody told me that their favorite talk on Thursday was you. And I did hear a lot of people say that you did really awesome on Thursday. And I've never seen you present by yourself before, which sucks. But
I rocked it.
I know. I'm sure. And I wanted to see it. And I love your unique approach to, like, you know, making people laugh, which is what we tried to do in our presentation as well. And so that's what I heard from a lot of people about our talk is like for people who don't know, Sarah did all of the work and research. And I just kind of showed up and was like, I'm going to mock you and be Vanna White. It's not that I don't know about this stuff, but you did like the scientific research to support like what we talk about and why we talk about it. And although we and Stephanie Ruper and several other people in the community have been saying how important it is for women's health that, you know, women think more carefully about intermittent fasting and not eating so low carb because it can be detrimental to their hormones. I personally didn't exactly know what the mechanisms for all of that were. And you did the research and laid it all out in a mostly understandable way. And my job was to relay that to the audience in an understandable way. And of course, mock you, because that's what I'm really good at.
We seemed to slide right into our banter on stage, which is good to know. To know for the future that we could do that in person in front of an audience as well as we can, like hanging out in front of our computers, not making eye contact.
Exactly. Yes. So I guess people don't, not everybody there obviously listened to the podcast because they came up to me after and they were like, you guys are so good together. And Stacey, you're so funny. And I'm like, this is kind of our shtick. Like,
yeah, we've been doing this.
We've been doing this for a really long time. You should check that out. So I highly suggest that people check out that podcast. I mean, that YouTube video when it comes out, because I think it's really important and interesting, especially for the majority of our listeners. And there were men in that group, just like our 16 or 22, whatever number we're up to now, male listeners here. I think it's just as important to like know and understand that information because, you know.
Well, I think also, I mean, the Ancestral Health Symposium crowd is such a it's a very intellectual crowd, but it's still very diverse. So you get researchers actually doing relevant research, which I just totally geek out over meeting those people. Like I just love that. And then you get practitioners. So you get people who are using sort of an ancestral health approach in order to, you know, help their clients and their patients with, you know, whatever health challenges they have. And then you get, you know, people who I think are more like us who really like getting into the nitty gritty scientific details. I mean, for me, that's my hobby. Like I love reading about this stuff so much that this is what I do to relax. And so, you just get this sort of group of really smart brains together who have different approaches, but are all just really keen to understand health and what is, recognizing that there's always going to be individuality, but what would be the best, you know, first approach for anybody. And we're having this conversation, I think, within the paleo community. There's been this real push towards ketogenic diets. And I think it was really important that you and I were able to say, hey, you know, as much as a ketogenic diet has some really powerful therapeutic value for certain health conditions, if we're going to start recommending this as a general approach for people, then like we need to be considering a much bigger picture than how people typically approach the benefits of a ketogenic diet. And especially for women's health, there's like so many ways that that very low carbohydrate diet can be really detrimental to us. And so what I love is that it's a community that is really invested in having that discussion. And it was, you know, even though there were, you know, people in the audience, you know, like Jimmy Moore and other, you know, really strong supporters of ketogenic diets, it was respectful and it was, you know, let's have a constructive conversation. And that's like exactly what these meetings are supposed to be. They're not supposed to stir up controversy. They're supposed to get, you know, everybody talking and everybody listening to each other's point of view. And I think all of us within the paleo movement, it's one of the things that I think is so unique and valuable about the paleo movement, is that we're willing to look at evidence and we're willing to look at new science. We're willing to, you know, listen to someone else's point of view and either adjust our opinions on something or maybe adjust theirs with our point of view or even, you know, some cases we've talked about on the show before where people have completely reversed their positions on certain things. The classic example is, you know, Rob Wolf completely reversing his position on fish oil supplementation after having one of these, you know, really constructive conversations with Chris Kresser and looking at the research showing that fish oil supplementation doesn't provide benefit beyond, you know, 4 to 6 weeks of supplementation. So that for me, I just loved the environment. I just loved the people that I was meeting and the discussions that I was able to have both sort of after my talks, but also in between and with other people and about their talks. And I had like major crushes on like half of the people who were presenting. So that was cool too. Like just, you know, being able to meet people that I totally girl fan over. Yes, we do that too. Well, yo, Stacey Simune, do you girl fan over anybody? You would. Chris Powell, you would.
No, I really wouldn't, actually.
No.
The only person that I kind of have a crush on right now is Half-Thor, who's like the strong man who is the mountain in Game of Thrones.
I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah, you're missing out. So that's the only person that I can think of right now that I kind of like follow on social media and I giggle about. Yeah. We're all just people. I mean, it's okay if you have the... I mean, I'm not making judgment on
anybody. No, I'm like totally cool when I meet these people. But there's this part of me inside of me that's like, you know, woohoo, I'm having a conversation with, you know, whoever. But it's kind of fun for me to feel like a really valuable member of this group discussion. And a very different experience for me this year compared to last year was like last year I was like introducing myself to people and you'd kind of get that like blank nod and stare like, oh yeah, nice to meet you. And then this year it's like, hey, Sarah. And I kind of felt like, you know, the difference in how my blog has grown and my book coming out in that year like suddenly meant that it was almost sometimes the opposite experience, that people were introducing themselves to me and I didn't know who they were. And it was kind of cool. I liked that.
The community is definitely growing. That's for sure.
It is.
I know. I had a lot of like new faces this time. And that's, you know, a great thing that the community is growing. And that's, I think, a testament to the successes that people are having within the lifestyle and wanting to help make a difference and getting involved. So that's awesome. I mean, my crowd is definitely the PaleoFX crowd, just because I do more practical application than kind of the scientific research side. So I did feel a little out of my element. I was definitely more comfortable talking about the strength training women's health presentation that I did with Stephanie Gaudreau. So, but because it was you that I was doing the super scientific one with, I was also really comfortable with that. Like I could just look at you and be like, you just take that, Sarah. And it's not to say that I don't understand it. I just feel like, there's a difference between kind of creating the information and doing the research and being knee deep and, you know, kind of reading the 10 back studies that go into the research paper and the abstract that you're reading versus saying, okay, I get what I'm reading and I can relay that to someone in an understandable way. And I think that's why you and I are such like yin and yang, kind of complementary to one another. Not that you can't relate things and not that I don't understand it, but that, you know, we're just...
We've got different skills to sort of bring together to form one superhuman...
awesomeness.
One superhuman of awesomeness. There we go.
Yeah. So, while we're recapping, and I mentioned it, the other talk that I did was, so remember Thursday, 22 hours, Friday, I had, our talk was like at 11 something. So we spent the morning kind of prepping for it. Cause that was the first time that you and I had got to sit down and go over it together.
Yeah, we basically had like 20 minutes of time.
But that's fine. Because we're comfortable with one another, it worked out fine. I hope I'll watch the video back and probably shudder in embarrassment because there were several things that I said and I was like, yeah, I didn't mean to say that. I didn't sleep very much yesterday. But was lunch and I had lunch with Stephanie. And then after lunch, we did our presentation on the health benefits of women for strength training. And we specifically addressed how we defined strength training. And I couldn't help but think of you when we were putting this presentation together, because it wasn't too long ago when you were doing your kind of boot camp, low weight, high volume exercise. And I was trying to convince you that that wasn't helping your health the way that you wanted it to. And so it was kind of a fascinating collision for me of kind of the specific strength training presentation that we did, where we talked about a lot of the aspects that don't affect the HPA axis, as we described in our conversation, really the adrenals and the cortisol hormone connection, and then how lifting really heavy for lower reps doesn't disrupt that the same way that doing a lot of reps will, and also that there's researched health benefits to going heavier for fewer, in addition to kind of the hormone balance, but also, you know, much different health benefits like prevention of osteoporosis and that kind of stuff, specifically for women. So it was really interesting for me. I was thrilled that at the end of the talk, there were several women that said that they were going to start lifting heavier, which is the best thing that we could hear. But there is also the same woman that I had suggested go to both those talks, came to that talk, and I talked with her later that evening, and she said she still wasn't going to do it because she was afraid of her body changing. And I get it. Like, looking at Stephanie and I, and you say, I don't want to look like a female football player. I think Stephanie's body is ridiculously fantastic and I would be thrilled to have it, but not everybody feels that way. Some women want to look very shapely and non-muscular, and that's fine. You don't have to eat double protein and work out the way Stephanie and I work out to get those benefits. And I was kind of sad that we hadn't portrayed that message in a way that convinced her during the presentation. I mean, I talked to her later about it and I was like, Stephanie and I's goal is to get bigger. Like, that's how we eat and we live our lives. Like, that's our intention. We try to build muscle. You know, you can get the health benefits of the things that we've been describing without, you know, looking like a female football player, if that's what you're concerned about. So, on one hand, I felt really good about that talk. I felt really comfortable with it. I had also had coffee right beforehand, so that was a good little helper there for me and my brain function. But, yeah, I was also kind of disappointed that despite the fact that the majority of people said they were convinced and were on board and were going to, you know, start lifting heavier immediately, that there was obviously still some hesitation in the crowd. So, oh well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about lifting heavy was, I mean, clearly I'm a convert. Today in CrossFit, we were back squatting and I back squatted 10 reps at what was my one rep max 10 weeks ago.
See, it works.
And I love being strong. Like, and I'm not bulking up. Like, it's, I think, you know, women, I don't, there's, I mean, we fight with this with all parts when we're talking about women's health, about this perception of what we're supposed to look like. And this, you know, when we look at the body types that we are idolizing in film or in magazines, that, you know, it's not a healthy body type. It's too lean, and it's too, you know, it's not strong. And I mean, clearly with some fantastic examples, but of like counter, like clearly very healthy actresses and magazine models. But as a general rule in society, we have this idea that we're supposed to be, you know, super skinny, and that's not healthy. So we kind of fight this battle on both fronts, because we fight it on the, you know, a healthy weight is maybe a little bit healthier than the number you have in your head. And so when your body, you know, finds this great plateau, you know, 10 pounds heavier than what your goal weight is, you kind of need to take a step back and look at how you feel and how you're doing and how your sleep is and how your moods are. And, you know, remember,
and it's your menstruation being a key factor there.
And, you know, how regular are your cycles, and, you know, is there anything bad happening there? And, you know, how's your energy level? Because thyroid is also affected. And look at those things as your markers of health instead of the weight on, or, you know, the number on the scale. And I mean, I'm not anti-scale. I find it just a really fantastic gauge for myself for how I'm doing. But it needs to be one number in a much larger metric. So, and so, you know, women, I think we get, you know, we have this idea that we want to have these, you know, we want to wear bikinis, and we think that we can't wear bikinis if, you know, you can't see our ribs, and it's maybe a bit of an exaggeration, but, you know, I think that we kind of all need to get over it and love our bodies and embrace our bodies. And
you can still love and embrace your body if you are naturally really lean and thin as well. Like, I don't want people to feel ostracized that we're saying that we believe that everybody needs to be bigger. Like, some women are just naturally much thinner, and some women are not. What we're saying is, if you're happy and healthy and you feel great, and you have the markers of health, like, that's what's really important.
Yes, that is a much more eloquent way of saying what I was trying to say.
The other way that I've heard it said that I really love is that, I think specifically with women of our generation, that we've been convinced from a societal factor, whether purposely or not, that women should take up less space. And that is both from like a physical, mental, verbal perspective. And I think, you know, we as women are feeling a lot more comfortable and confident in expressing ourselves and having an opinion. And we have voting rights, and we have a women's rights movement, and we feel really great about, you know, growing the capacity to take up more space when it comes to our opinion and our thoughts and our voice. But for some reason, we don't feel comfortable taking up more physical strength, physical space, and being stronger and more physical. And, you know, I love when Matt offers to carry my bags and opens the door for me. Like, I love feeling like a lady, but I also love, you know, being able to take a $200 grocery trip and carry all 18 bags of whatever it is, and farmers carry it one trip into the house, because I'm like the laziest person ever. And that's, those things are just important to me. And I think when someone used the phrase, I think it might have been Gluten-Free Girl that used it that way. And it really resonated with me. And so maybe it'll resonate with somebody else. But the idea of no longer thinking that you need to take up less space. And if you're naturally leaner and what someone would call thin, then by all means, like, we're not saying that that's not okay, and we're not judging you. Like, that's awesome. My friend Amy is incredibly smaller than I am, but she is ripped and super strong.
She's so strong.
And, you know, it's not her intention to, like, you know, oh, I need to whittle down. Like, Amy's always talking about, like, putting on more muscle in a capacity of, like, wanting to be stronger. And that's what she's interested in. And not everybody's interested in being stronger. That's okay too. But our talk specifically was about, you know, the health benefits of that heavy strength training, whether you want to be, you know, bigger and stronger or not. You know, you can heavy strength train as an 80-year-old woman. Heavy for somebody else and heavy for me are two different things. And so we
and it
also...
And it doesn't mean that you're going to have these, like, giant manly,
right,
you know, yeah, muscles. Like
that's, and that's something that, you know, you intentionally go for or you don't. It also means that you're going to get shapely, like, smaller waist and bigger hips and bigger, fuller booty. And that's also societally acceptable as being a womanly thing. So, you know, there are positives and negatives. but one of the other things, like you were mentioning, is that we did discuss and address the emotional aspect of, you know, how you're feeling since you started CrossFit, of just, you know, the responses of some informal surveys that Stephanie put out, came back with the majority of people seeming to say that the reason that they enjoy strength training the most is the empowerment and the confidence that they get from it. And that is something that all people need and want. And so I feel like it's amazing that that is what people are feeling from it and how people are responding, you know?
Yeah, I went to your talk and I really enjoyed it. I also have a girl crush on Stephanie, so that helps. I told you, like, girl crushes all over the place.
Yeah, I too have a girl crush on Stephanie, but I didn't get all, like, butterflies in my belly as we had lunch together. It was okay.
No, I'm, like, totally cool when I talk to her. I do kind of, like, stalk her on Instagram, just a little bit. I did tell her that too, though.
Did she get that awkward look on her face, like, how far away do you live from me?
No. She was like, it's okay. I think she was like, it's all right.
It's kind of what Instagram is. I mean,
pretty much stalking.
Public stalking.
Yeah. So what was your favorite talk that you got to actually see?
So the only two talks that I attended that weren't my talks were both amazing. I really liked Diana Rogers's talk on the importance of purchasing specifically foods that are commonly exported, but she discussed specifically bananas, cacao, and coffee, the importance of purchasing them organic and or fair trade. And one of the things that kind of really resonated with me about that, and it was a very short presentation with a lot of information, and what I think she did really well was give recommendations, not just say, this is such a problem, but she gave recommendations on how you can make good, better, and best choices when it comes to those things. And she's got a blog post on her site, Sustainable Dish. Monica can put a link in the show notes that everyone should check out with her recommendations. But I think the thing that resonated the most with me about that was the idea that, you know, I think it was like 2 years ago that we committed to only purchasing sustainably and humanely raised meat because it was really important to me as often as we could that we make those choices. That, you know, we're not perfectionists. Of course, sometimes, especially when we eat out, we're not making those choices. But for the most part, we've, you know, we rearranged our budget and we rearranged our lifestyle to be able to make that choice because it was important for us, both for the environment and the animal, as well as our own health. And so, what was really fascinating to me was thinking about it in the context of, like, it's just as important for me to make that choice about these foods where humans are being exploited the same way that animals are being exploited in order to make these foods cheaper. And so, I mean, we already buy fair trade chocolate because Kelly from Spunky Coconut really highlighted the importance of that in her Paleo Chocolate Lovers book. So we switched from Enjoy Life chocolate chips to the Equal Exchange chocolate chips when they came out. And all the other chocolate that we buy is fair trade. But we weren't being very good about coffee. Like we will definitely be making better coffee choices. We usually buy cold brew. So I'm going to need to investigate into where those sources of the cold brew are coming from or learn to cold brew ourselves. And bananas, I think usually buy organic, which is one of her good recommendations because it means that the people who are at least working the farms aren't, you know, crippled by the pesticides that they're working with. But I'm going to try to look into places around the area where I could potentially find fair trade bananas as well. The best recommendation that she gave on bananas was to buy local fruit. And like, that's just not going to work because my kids love bananas.
Fair trade bananas.
Would you say?
My local Whole Foods carries fair trade.
Okay. Yeah. I figured Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or something.
Yeah.
I think we buy the organic ones from Trader Joe's because they're so affordable, but I'm going to have to look into it. So I thought that talk was amazing. You and I both went to that talk. And then the other talk that I went to, oh no, you didn't go to that one. I went to that one. The one that you and I went to was the broth talk. And that lady cracked me up. Dr. Kayla cracked me up. It was, first of all, like I am the broth lady in the community. So it was really important for me to attend that one. And, what I was curious about and kind of what you and I conversated about beforehand was whether or not they were going to address the fact that there are claims within the community that bone broth is micronutrient rich. And one of the things that we found in our research for Beyond Bacon when we were trying to determine the different nutrient values of all the different parts of an animal, we went in thinking that we were going to say that the bones and making broth from them was one of the most micronutrient things that you could eat. And what we found was that there's absolutely no research available that suggests that there are micronutrients rich in broth. What it is rich in broth is collagen. And you and I know that, and we talk about the specific benefits of that to the body regularly. But I was curious about how this talk was going to go because I knew from my own findings that there weren't any. So I was like, well, maybe this person has found some stuff, or maybe this person is going to publicly address what we've kind of all know but aren't actually addressing. And she did, I thought, very well, where she talked about, you know, the research just not being there, just it doesn't matter, you know, different kind of bones, different kind of cooking styles, different, all this kind of stuff that there's just nothing that addresses the kind of claims for it being high in calcium and all that kind of stuff. So what it does do, however, is the collagen enables your body to work more efficiently and in a synergistic way to absorb the nutrients that you are eating. And so if you make a stock with vegetables in it, then the stock's going to have calcium in it and your body is going to more efficiently use those micronutrients because the collagen enables you to digest it better. So I thought that talk was amazing. What was great, the best thing about that was that it was coming from like this little old lady, and Dr. Kayla, forgive me for calling you that, but and she was like using the F word and she was dropping jokes. It was hysterical. It was such a good talk.
So funny because she had this sort of really gentle demeanor, and then every once in a while she would like, you know, have these really kind of slightly crude jokes, or she would swear, or and a really fantastic wit. It was hysterically funny.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I really enjoyed her talk. I think my favorite talk, I really enjoyed Dan Party's talk, but I did last year too. If you remember for our AHS recap last year, I think I talked about how much I liked Dan Party of Dan's Plan, his talk last year. And this
what was
year
his talk?
This year he talked about behavioral research, and he was actually looking at behavior sciences and basically how you can support people making changes to, you know, behavior like lifestyle, but also like food choices, but in a, you know, sustainable way. So it becomes something that's really natural and a habit, and how you get there. So he was talking a lot about reward, and he went through like all of this really interesting research basically showing that, you know, rewards for good behavior, especially sort of instant ones, improve behavior better than punishment for bad behavior does, or lack of reward for bad behavior. But it was very much like he just went through all this like really fascinating psychology research, and ended up sort of in the end, sort of migrating to talking about these devices like Fitbits and how they've basically been designed to reward these types of behavioral changes. And then he's kind of talked about some of the limitations about it and sort of the information overload. And it's basically only, it's only a good reward if the, you know, like if the information is useful information. So, you know, just because we can measure it doesn't mean we should. So it ended up being like a really interesting discussion. And ended up with the questions afterwards, you know, people were very much like, you know, but doesn't it make more sense to have more like quantifiable measures and actually have, you know, devices that can, you know, measure our inflammation or our metabolic rate, or, you know, like rather than these sort of more passive measurements. And apparently there's devices in development that are going to be able to do that. So that was really cool. And then I really enjoyed Denise Menger's talk. I always love how Denise Menger, she takes these sort of, it's a historical perspective and a scientific perspective sort of simultaneously. And she'll, I mean, she was really just trying to make people think, but she was presenting this really compelling, well-performed research where they put people on extremely low-fat, low-protein, high-carbohydrate diets and showed, you know, tons of different health benefits. And to the point, so she was showing actually, I mean, the more predictable stuff that people have heard of, you know, lowering cardiovascular risk factors and these patients lost weight. But she was talking about one study where they put the patients on high carb, low fat, low protein diet and reversed diabetes, which is kind of the opposite of what we normally think of as being a therapeutic diet for diabetes, and actually like permanently reversed it. Not like when you do a low carb diet for diabetes, you have to stay low carb. Like as soon as you have carbs, the diabetes is, you know, typically, you know, still there, or at least for a long time, depending on the type of diabetes. And you know, these people were able to start adding back in other foods and the diabetes stayed away. And so it was a really interesting research. And, you know, the big question was like, you know, why? You know, what is it about these diets that are, you know, it was like white rice and refined sugar. Like literally one of the studies, the people were allowed to eat up to a bag of white sugar a day. Like what? It was fascinating.
I guess it's just like a mechanism to trigger confusion in the body or something. I mean, I don't know. That's just fascinating to me. I hadn't heard about this one.
Yeah. So it was just, I mean, basically like, let's think about what's going on here that makes a diet like this have therapeutic value, you know, and then compare that to some of these other, you know, very extreme diets that we're looking at, and why do they have therapeutic value? And what is it, what systems are we manipulating in the body in common? And it was sort of the talk that was just like full of questions and there, you know, not a lot of answers, but it was a fascinating overview of some of the very high carb, like 90% carbohydrate diets. And also, she ended up presenting this like scale that was basically showing, you know, very high carbohydrate, low fat versus very high fat, low carbohydrate, and both, you know, looking at both a ketogenic diet and the diets and the studies that she was looking at, they both quite dramatically moderate protein intake. And basically showing like you've got these really potent therapeutic effects on each side of this extreme and kind of bleh in the middle. And what, you know, what systems are we manipulating in common between these two approaches? It was very interesting. It was just one of those like really thought-provoking, you know, let's evaluate, you know, some of the biochemistry here and really understand what we're doing to hormones. And of course, you know, just like we've had the discussion about ketogenic diets having all of these sort of tangential effects that are not beneficial and not necessarily the goal. And while, you know, people will say women will go on a ketogenic diet and they'll lose a ton of weight and they'll be super happy, but they'll also lose their periods and be infertile, which is like not the point of the diet. And so, you know, these are older studies that were done in these like super low fat, but, you know, they were saying that there were clearly some side effects, such as depression. And, you know, one of the, and, you know, there's always the, like, Pritikin, I guess it was, ended up committing suicide. But, of course, he'd had not only been following a low-carbohydrate diet, but had been through the ringer with a battle with cancer. So whether it was, you know, mental health from being so low-fat or, like, literally that this guy just had a really hard time of stuff. But it became this, like, really interesting, you know, it sort of evolved into this interesting conversation of, you know, right, so when you go on a low-fat diet and you reduce your cholesterol and you lower your risk of cardiovascular disease, which, you know, we've got, there are lots of studies that show that, at least for certain people, dramatically lowering fat intake does lower cardiovascular risk factors, but then all of the other things that we're not looking at. So it lowers cardiovascular disease risk, but it increases risk of cancer and it increases mental health problems. So it was a very much a take a step back and don't discount something because of a bias that you have that something's going to work. So it was I just thought it was really thought provoking and you know, I always enjoy Denise's, you know, talks and blog posts and things. So
yeah, I will have to check.
Going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out on YouTube because that sounds fascinating. And I've seen Denise talk before and she's really compelling and interesting. So that'll be good. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was our Mission Heirloom dinner.
Oh, totally.
So we had the privilege of attending because
like
we were
real privilege, like super privilege.
Yes, of attending a dinner which was presented in the kitchen of a, I guess I'll just call it a business, but a food making business in the Berkeley area of San Francisco, Mission Heirloom, and they currently do like a food delivery service, but they're opening up a cafe, and they also make the most amazing yuca crackers that I'm going to have to get shipped here or figure out how to make myself. And she was kind enough to share with me how they make them. But first of all, it was kind of admittedly overwhelming because there were certain points where she was going through all the things that they thought through in the kitchen. And it makes you kind of overwhelmed with, oh my gosh, all the things kind of in your life that you haven't yet taken back to that ancestral approach that could potentially be harming you or putting toxins in your system without you realizing it. But also just amazing the dedication and thought that went into this kitchen, because I think of someone like Jenny from the Urban Poser being able to eat at this place. You know, that Jenny has an autoimmune disorder that is very reactive, and she does not eat out at restaurants because she's, even if she has like just a minutia of an experience of something, not even with my having celiac and you having extreme gluten intolerance and the cross reactivity of a crumb on a, you know, countertop could affect you and I, it could debilitate Jenny. And so, thinking that there are people like her who have, you know, asthma from bleach or ammonia that probably aren't eating out at restaurants, being able to come and purchase ready-made food, top quality ready-made food from this kitchen, and will soon be able to eat in a restaurant environment for it. And all of the thought and attention that went into this,
and just amazing,
incredible,
and
definitely, I'm sure, extremely expensive investment for them. And the fact that they're willing to make that investment, knowing that there is an audience who's ready and willing to support them, was amazing. And the passion of the couple who owns it was inspiring for sure. So some of the things that were interesting to me, that they don't use any chemicals at all. Like they thought through how to get around the California health code. Not get around it. They're still passing their health code. I don't want to get them in trouble. But that they're finding alternative ways to do it rather than what every other restaurant in the industry
for
is
like
doing.
Everything for like how to wash their dishes without bleach and how to
launder their own towels.
Right. what to make their cutting boards out of, so their cutting boards aren't plastic boards. Like, it was just fascinating.
Yeah, every single thing in the kitchen is like a natural material. They put their food in glass. They, you know, use wood cutting boards or stainless steel. Their cooking devices don't conduct heat to have carcinogens, because when you caramelize or I don't want to say roast, but when you get any sort of like blackening on a food in a high heat environment, it does have some sort of carcinogens. Now, I would say that for the average person, when you're eating foods rich in antioxidants and a balanced, healthy diet, those kinds of things aren't really a concern. Cavemen definitely cooked over a fire. But the fact that they created cooking techniques in 100% humidity oven in order to avoid that stuff for people who need it or want it, I would assume if someone, you know, were fighting cancer, that would definitely be important for them. So that was something I hadn't ever thought about either, you know?
And the food was amazing.
It was really good food.
So delicious. And they have a snout to tail philosophy. So, you know, we were eating it was just some of the most delicious food I've ever eaten. Like, quite frankly, like it would be worth flying back
to eat at their cafe
there again. Like, it was so amazing.
Yeah. I felt better after that meal, because it was the first like real foods meal that I'd had. And it was like, after each course, there are five courses, after each course, it was like, oh my goodness, like my cells, I can feel them being replenished. The chicken liver and the salmon and the, just everything was like, yes, this is what my body needs. And then for dessert, I got to try camel milk, which we've talked about on the podcast before as being really close to human milk. And never in my life did I think that it like actually would be available to people. But Monica can put a link in the show notes to the Desert Farms, which is where they're sourcing and top quality kind of camel farm, and then they're bottling it in BPA free bottles and able to ship to people. So if you're, you know, sensitive to milk and you want to try camel's milk, you can use this company. I had like absolutely no problem with it. Now, granted, I did only have like 2 ounces or something, but then they also served cricket flowers, which most people probably haven't had cricket the way you and I have had cricket. So it wasn't a big deal for us, but that was also interesting.
There were cricket flower cookies.
Yeah.
And they were just delicious cookies, which doesn't surprise me because crickets are actually really yummy. But, you know, everyone was like super excited. You know, not only were they like really clean, paleo, healthy cookies, but they had extra protein and fiber from crickets.
Yeah. So, all in all, definitely good experiences. I also got to, you know, do some fun stuff. We explored the local butcher. You and I had lunch at the local butcher together.
Also an amazing lunch.
Yeah, that was really good. We had Gina from So Let's Hang Out join us as well, and we broke her organ meat cherry, by the way. I don't know if you knew that that was happening, but she...
Of all organ meat?
I think so.
Because I knew, like, it was the first time she'd ever had head cheese, and she was kind of hesitant about the pâté, but wow.
That's the impression that I got from her Instagram
like,
post.
Clearly a good way to...
Yeah, it was top quality, good ingredients. Yeah,
delicious, not organ meaty at all. So definitely a good way to introduce somebody.
Yeah.
Organ meat.
And they had broth, really good homemade bone broth, as well as soups that they had made with stock. And so... I felt like a human again after that meal, but, yeah, so it was great to see you, and I'm glad I don't have to do this podcast making awkward eye contact with you.
So you don't want to start doing video podcasts?
Viv tried to do video podcasts with the Strong Woman Radio thing that we did. The first one was video, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. Never. Like, no.
I just, normally record like in my pajamas, like no makeup on, you know, amber-tinted glasses. I'm just not sure that's what the world needs to see.
No. Well, I had no idea that that's how Abel James did podcasts. And, like, I did a podcast with him once and, like, didn't realize I was going to be put up with everybody of me, like, in my natural state. But, you know, whatever.
Monica, feel free to put in links.
No, do not put links in the show notes.
Everyone else, feel free to use the Google.
Yeah, so I guess that's it. We have a really, really exciting guest for next week. So,
super stoked.
This, I wouldn't necessarily call this a chit-chat show. We had the intention of kind of recapping AHS, and now hopefully when all of those YouTube videos go up, you can prioritize which ones you might be interested in listening to. And then next week we will have, I promise, we'll have an interesting guest. So that'll be good as well. Unless, of course, Skype fail, and then you never know.
But, oh, knock on wood, quick.
Yeah.
Oh.
So... cool. Well, I have so much to catch up on, and I know that you just got back yesterday.
I have to take my babysitter home right now.
Cool. So we are recording in daylight. It's kind of weird for me. But
I know. If you heard some thump, thump, thumps, that was not actually Stacy's kids. That was my girls. So any thump, thump, thumping that made it through, apparently my girls can do that too.
Yeah, my kids are at the pool because I could not trust them to be here. All right. Well, I will talk to you, Sarah, with our guest not too distant future, and hope everyone had a better weekend than my travel was, and we'll be back next week.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.